Great. Well, we're very excited to share our ASH summary for you. And joining us today is our Chairman and CEO, Dr. Dajun Yang, our Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Yifan Zhai, and our Senior Vice President of Clinical Development, Dr. Chen Zhi. I will now turn it over to Dr. Yang to begin the presentation.
Good morning. Can everybody see my slide in the full screen mode?
Yes, now we
Great.
can.
thank you all for attending. This is a disclaimer. So we are very excited to attend this year's ASH. I just want to highlight a few pictures we were doing at ASH. So this is the first time we had a very prime location of the booth and a very nice design and a very central location just behind the ASH. And we hold several advisory board meeting at the near the conference center. And many oral presentations and posters. The team are very excited. One of the largest edible MDS have about 60 PIs over the world coming. So this conference, we have multiple presentations, but focus primarily on two late-stage assets, olverembatinib, lisaftoclax, and we highlight the distribute a lot of information about our four global registration trials. So we will go through each one of them today, especially those presented at ASH. So first, I'd like to present the lisaftoclax. This is something we take 30 years from lab to clinic to market. As a team, actually, we were the first one to put 8101, the really first small molecule inhibitor of BCL2 and BCL-xL MCL1 into clinic back in 2004. Okay. And then throughout the years, 21 years, we have put three compounds in the clinic. The second one was actually dual BCL2-xL inhibitor, paciftoclax. And then we have the third generation, the BCL2 selective. Lisaftoclax finally made to the clinic, to the market. So 8101, as I show here, was the first IND cleared by FDA back in 2004. And 2005, 20 years ago, the lead PI, Tom Kipps, was actually our leading PI on 8101 for the CLL. So I had a picture with him during the ASH. We were at a session together. That was already 21 years ago, from the very beginning. Of course, just to highlight a few preclinical activities we have done. The AT1, the APG2575 in the preclinical setting, in some of the assays, we have a lower IC50 and more potent. I think significantly, maybe in certain models. Where the venetoclax has no activity and APG2575 show strong activity. But I think more importantly is from the day one, when we designed the phase one trial, we try to be different than venetoclax. So this is a really important differentiation from day one. And so venetoclax, as you know, is using this lead-in for BTKI and also 4 weeks or 5 weeks weekly dosing up to the target dose. From day one, we designed this daily dosing up, only take 5 days to the target dose and no BTKI lead-in. Okay, so this is really important for the CLL, SLL patients. Especially in U.S., most are outpatient setting. So this is our approved label and using the daily dosing up July in China, So this is the only daily dose roundup schedule on the market. So as you can see, we have only three dose strengths and take 5 days to target dose. And in the current monotherapy approval, the target dose actually is 600 milligram. And then we can start introduce a combination right away. So at this year's ASH, we had an oral presentation from the leading PI, Professor Zhu, and also the AML MDS as a poster from the US leading PI, Dr. Kadia. So this is really the first time we release the full clinical data of the phase two pivotal, phase two registration trial in the BTK inhibitor failed RR-CLL/SLL patients. I'd like to mention, actually, it's good that CDE approved our pivotal phase two trial 4 years ago, but at the same time also give us a very high bar that require every single patient have to fail both chemoimmunotherapy and the BTK inhibitor. That time actually is very hard to recruit the patient who fail the BTKI. So this is not just the RR-CLL, but also the BTK inhibitor failed the RR-CLL patients. So as you can see, this is a daily dose roundup design. In the presentation, we actually highlight the details of patient characteristics. It turned out those are really high-risk CLL/SLL patients, especially complex karyotype accounts more than 40%. The P17 deletion and the P53 mutation is very high. It's much higher than many trials in this patient population. I think more importantly, their patient actually have multiple, just the complex karyotype and also the 17p deletion and the P53 mutation. And also actually a lot of more than 50% are unmutated IGHV. Okay, so as you can see, historically, all this CLL registration trial are much less risk than what we have enrolled in this registration trial. So despite this high risk, very late stage, heavily pretreated patients, we did achieve a very excellent OR over 62%. And also in the MRD activity, tested patients actually is also very high. So also presented a very nice PFS and the OS. And more importantly, we did some subgroup analysis, such as those with 17p deletion, P53 mutation, and also a complex karyotype, demonstrate really excellent efficacy. And the overall safety are really well tolerated, and no tumor lysis syndrome reported in this trial, and also no drug-related deaths. So if you look at the hematological-related TRAEs, this is much less than other BCL2 inhibitors, especially in this heavily pretreated patient group. So overall, we consider lisaftoclax have optimal efficacy safety balance with the daily dose roundup, shorter T-half, and no tumor lysis syndrome reported in this trial, and no DDI. So in summary, we take this word less is more. So basically, the approval actually is for one systemic therapy CLL patients, and without the emphasis on the RR-CLL. So I think this is really the first time globally that the lisaftoclax is the single agent with the CLL after one therapy. Okay, so basically lisaftoclax could offer CLL/SLL patients better option as a monotherapy and or in combination with the BTK inhibitors. So the second presentation is from this updated report on the lisaftoclax in the AML and high-risk MDS patients. This actually take a while to recruit the patients because Project Optimus. So as you can see, we had the two part of a design. The first part is just a dose escalation to determine the MTD and the DLT. It took about 22 patients. After that, we did a dose expansion to evaluate efficacy and the safety and determine the dose. Overall, we treated more than 100 patients, and especially in the RR AML patients or the RR high risk MDS patients, there's a high response rate. Okay, so it is worth to mention in the high risk MDS patients, okay, we actually achieve a 40% CR, 40% bone marrow CR. So the overall we achieved the 80% OR. This is really impressive. Within the RR MDS patients, we also achieved the 40%, 50% OR. And more importantly, in the venetoclax resistant AML or MDS patients, we achieved the just by combination lisaftoclax with AZA, we achieved about 31% OR. So this is really of the potential for the ven failed patients in the AML setting, which is really unmet medical need right now. We also did some genomic analysis looking for potential biomarkers. So this is a heat map, as you can see, that we actually treated patients more than 50% have p53 mutation. So despite those, we actually also see a pretty decent response. I think more importantly, at this conference, we had a really high interest from investigators around the world for our GLORA-4 high-risk MDS trial. So I think, partially because the VERONA trial failed, and currently our leading PI is Dr. Garcia Manero and also Dr. Xiaojun Huang. Dr. Garcia Manero was actually the leading PI for VERONA trial. Okay, so we are very pleased that FDA, EMA, and also China CDE cleared this global phase 3 registration trial for the first-line high-risk MDS patients. And I think if successfully carried out, we could be the first BCL2 inhibitor approved for the treatment of high-risk MDS. This is a highlight of a trial design, and well received by the PIs around the world, actively recruiting patients. Let me turn to the olverembatinib data highlight. At the conference, we have overall about seven posters. I think a really important one is this Polaris one. I think just before the ASH meeting, we have announcement that POLARIS-1, global phase 3 registration trial for the first-line Ph-positive ALL cleared by FDA and EMA, okay? And we presented the part 1 of this global phase 3 registration trial, demonstrated very favorable efficacy and tolerance. And the overall trial design is this is a 2-to-1 randomization. And with the dealer's choice, investigator choice, TKI, at the end of the induction, 3 months, looking for the MRD negative CR rate as the primary endpoint for approval. So we are very excited to present as a part of the POLARIS-1 study. As you can see, that the MRD negative CR rate is as high as 64%. Okay, so overall CR rate is about over 94%. I think this is really the best in class in terms of response rate and also tolerance. The historical data on the imatinib at that time was not looking for the MRD negative CR rate, and dasatinib probably often used off the off label in the real world. The CMR rate is only 24%. The ponatinib trial, The MRD, this is the most relevant one, as the same patient population, the first line, had only about a 34% MRD negative rate. Of course, it's double the imatinib in that registration phase three trial. And we also demonstrate the overall good safety and the similar PK in combo with low intensity chemo. Another really important study is update the second line treatment options for the CML patients after failing either the first generation or second generation TKI. I think you can see the overall MR rate is really favorable and also improve over time. And in the subgroup analysis, we actually found out that if the patient in the first line using the second generation TKI actually have responded better. Of course, the baseline is important for those with less than 10% BCR-ABL is actually responding better. That you see the baseline patient's population is important to determine the response rate. Another poster presentation is those of the registration trial. Okay, so we had a 4-year follow-up for the pivotal phase two registration trial in patients who failed three TKIs. So at that time, this is the full approval registration trial. We enrolled over 144 patients, and this is a 2-to-1 ratio against the best available treatment, which is mostly just some not very effective treatment options for patients after failing three TKI, including the first generation and the two second generation. At that time, China do not have any third generation TKI or asciminib. As you can see, overall remain very favorable EFS and also the safety profile. I think it's interesting, it's important to know that over the time during the treatment, okay, after this is a 4 years follow-up, the prevalence of hematological AE actually reduced over time. Okay, so this is looking for the grade 3 and the plus hematological AEs. You can see thrombocytopenia, neutropenia actually reduced over time, probably by clear the cancer cells in bone marrow. And if this is any grade, primarily grade 1 or 2, non-hematological AE also reduced over time. Except the only one is skin pigmentation, which is not really important non-hematological AE. This actually result is consistent with our phase one study and also the pivotal conditional approval study. Another important application of the olverembatinib is actually in this rare heme disease, myeloid lymphoid neoplasm with FGF receptor 1 rearrangement. This is one of a rare malignancy with a poor prognosis and no really effective treatment. It takes 16 centers over 3 years to recruit 20 patients. Actually, this is the first time we report that olverembatinib actually have a very promising efficacy. Just at 2 months, 76% of patients achieve a CRh or CHR, and the best response actually is about 5 receive a complete molecular response. Some of them eligible also did a transplant, and 3 had a still CMR rate, no disease detected. So this is a really significant option for patients with these rare disorders and no effective treatment. And there's another poster presented looking at the blast crisis CML patients. Actually, olverembatinib also offer a good response. I think it's important at this conference that there are other TKIs or sinimib or like allosteric inhibitors. Actually, we want to share with you in the this same patient same cell line that we develop asciminib-resistant BCR-ABL mutations highlighted here. The other TKI actually could also offer some response, but of course, olmertinib is among the all is the best one against the T315 mutation, compound mutation, and those asciminib-resistant BCR-ABL mutations. One last highlight like this year is our APG 5918 is the EED inhibitor. So EED is a part of the PRC complex. Another notable target is EZH2. EZH2 has many approved drugs on the market, but so far no EED inhibitors approved yet. And the EED inhibitor also have potential to treating the some of the anemia like sickle cell anemia, thalassemia. At this conference, you probably noticed that Fallcrown have demonstrated the clinical efficacy with sickle cell anemia. In the preclinical model, we actually did additional oncology study. In the cell line, we demonstrate combination with pomalidomide, really good synergy. This is actually resistant cell line to both our EED inhibitor or pomalidomide, but a combination of a good synergy. In the animal model, we demonstrate very good synergy in these resistant models, and also the another third generation IMiD, CC92480, even show better synergistic effect. Just to highlight that we did have presented before. Our drug in the preclinical setting demonstrate also similar activity as a Fallcrown compound, and in some extent, probably better in the same model, looking for the in vivo efficacy in the anemia model. So overall, I think that we demonstrate the. That really potential for the silver class combination over imatinib will really offer synergistic effect in the AML and also with our another really promising compound MDR-p53 inhibitor synthetic lethality MOA. So the synergy in the AML and the DLBCL. This is just a highlight more potential of our targeted small molecule drugs. So in conclusion, the take-home message is that the first time we release the full clinical data of a registration trial in the BTK inhibitor failed RRCL patient, really high risk and demonstrate really excellent efficacy and a safety profile, and highlight those two global phase III trial cleared by FDA and EMA. Especially the first line MDS, the GLORA-4. There are huge interest on our upcoming BCL-2 inhibitor in the global market. Olverembatinib, we demonstrate Polaris global registration trial part A in the first line PSA positive ALL, and we're looking forward registration trial with the clearance now by FDA and EMA. Overall, olverembatinib offered a very excellent MRD negative CRA today and also demonstrate multiple efficacy and safety, and especially 4-year follow-up in the resistant TKI patient population from the registration trial. And also, we demonstrate another potential efficacy with the EED inhibitor in multiple myeloma. And the emerging data coming out with this drug in anemia and oncology, including the previous one we presented in for the prostate cancer. So this is really the last slide I'd like to share with you all. So we have a multiple late stage heme malignancy focused novel compounds in the global clinical development. And the highlight at this year's ASH presentation, we are very excited. Had many discussions and meetings with the investigators around the world. As you can see, our targeted drugs cover majority of heme malignancies, including anemia. We're looking forward to work with investigators around the world, and I will probably stop here. Be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Dr. Yang. Okay, we are now open to questions. Just a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please use the raised hand icon found at the bottom of this webinar application. When you're called on, please unmute when asking your question. Just give a minute. Okay, our first question comes from Brian Cheng from JP Morgan. Hey, Brian.
Hey guys, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Well, thanks for doing this recap for us. Maybe just first on the Polaris One trial. Dajun, I'm wondering if you can speak to, your thinking around the reliability from this early Polaris One data cut, as your study proceeds. And also just how should we think about the data flow in the coming year or so? And can you remind us, also how your enrollment is going in the Polaris One trial? And when could we expect a top line? And I have a quick follow-up. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Very good question. I think that the Polaris One is a very significant in two aspects. First of all, globally, there's no very effective target drug for the Ph-positive ALL. Imatinib was initially entered the guideline, but then was not very active. In the real world, dasatinib probably widely used, but also off-label. The ponatinib probably by far from the FALCON trial demonstrate best response. 3 months CMR rate or MRD negative rate about 34%. Double that of imatinib. So that's really the similar patient population, first line for the Ph-positive ALL. As you can see from our part of A of the Polaris One, we got a 64% 3 months of MRD negativity rate of more than 50 patients. And we are very happy that globally, FDA, EMA also cleared that registration trial. We are actively enrolled. We have multiple countries, regulatory agency cleared, and multiple sites. I think that the enrollment for this one could be very fast, and because we're actually using the investigator choice TKI at the control arm, which is a low-intensity chemo. This is only 3 months induction CMR rate or MRD negative rate. So I think that the readout can be very fast. Hopefully, we could see enrollment complete by the early 2027, and then we can file the NDA to the regulatory agency of the same year.
Got it. And then maybe just one quick follow-up on the lisaftoclax. Clearly, there are several differentiation here. I think one of them is the ramp up in dosing. You can do it much faster than venetoclax, and then also the lack of tumor lysis syndrome. And just on the tumor lysis syndrome front, I'm curious if you can kind of give us a little bit more color on the significance of that side effect. What are you hearing from the ground, when your treating physicians are using lisaftoclax? And thanks for taking our questions this morning.
Good questions, Brian. I think that the early days of BCL2, especially venetoclax in the CLL patient population, tumor lysis syndrome was quite serious. And then, of course, taking the prophylactic measurement like hydration, and also in the case of venetoclax, actually also sonrotoclax, they are taking this weekly dose right now, right? and also with the BTK leading to debulking. I think all tumor lysis syndrome is well under control, probably not as serious as the early days. But unfortunately for venetoclax and also the sonrotoclax, their registration trial was using the weekly dose or not. So their approved label, they can only use that weekly dose or not. And I think overall, we offer the patient really good convenience, which is important for the CLSL patients in U.S. Secondly, I think another thing very important, we and others now demonstrate that the BCL-2 inhibitor, especially for us, have a shorter T-half, which is a really favorable advantage, that not just less tumor lysis syndrome, but more probably importantly, is less marrow toxicity, right? And in our drug, another important advantage is no DDI. That really offer the better, option for combination, not just with the BTK inhibitor, but also with other antifungal antibiotics. I think taken together, the tumor lysis syndrome is probably well under management now, but the marrow toxicity is probably major differentiation, and also no DDI.
Great, thank you. Thanks, Dr. Yang.
Thank you, Brian. Our next question comes from Wang Bing Zhu of Citi. Hi, Wang Bing.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my question and congratulations on the progress. So maybe I have only one quick question on the lisaftoclax in the first line MDS. So very not so venetoclax failed in the very nice. So do you have any insights from this ASH for this trial and our differentiation in our first line of MDS? And also we know that we have got the clearance from the FDA and EMA for our GLORY-4. So what's our trial design and the enrollment progress and the potential data readout timeline? Thank you.
So maybe we can have our CMO, Dr. Jai, to answer this question.
Hi, good morning, good evening, everyone. It's a good question. So it took us more than a year, probably 18 months, to get all the health authority, especially FDA, and gave the clearance on the GLORY-4 design because multiple reasons. One is the Project Optimus, right? They need to require multiple data, not just the efficacy, safety data, analysis, the response, the exposure response comparisons. So we were very happy announced that multiple health agencies, including actually FDA, EMA, and also China. And this GLORY-4 study, actually, if you may remember, we received the clearance from CDE first, and then take a while to go through all the major other health agencies, including FDA and EMA. So it's a great progress. And meanwhile, because Verona failed at that time when we initiated, actually nobody know Verona will fail or success. The major, you asked a very key question, fundamentally why we feel we have a confidence we'll win, because compared to venetoclax, actually we have show very different safety profile and a much shorter T-half, and also have no DDI, much translate into the clinical setting and demonstrate much less marrow suppression. So actually, we released part of the data and from the AU-101 study, and we conducted two studies in China, AC-101 plus the AU-101, clearly demonstrate a very dose-dependent efficacy. Of course, it's not the long-term, we don't have the long-term overall survival data yet, but at least compare the data, the safety data, the efficacy data, we feel confident our compound will do better than venetoclax. Especially, they already released the data in SOHO and in ASH, right? Dr. Garcia Moreno released their data. So compared to their data, we know we feel confident we're able to do a better job our compound.
So maybe I can add a few more extra point here. I think it's important to know the Verona trial fail is not because of the target, right? So the target in BCL2, especially selective one, already approved for the CLL and especially AML. And AML, I mean, some of the high-risk MDS will actually eventually become the AML, right? Basically, they already treating the worst case MDS AML well or widely used. Second, I think that they in the real world off-label use of venetoclax are actually quite common for patients with MDS. In the data release at both SOHO and ASH this time, I think that you do see a couple notable differences here. And those differences add up together. Maybe the reasons make the Verona trial negative, right? So one thing, this is a randomized phase III trial, and you can notice that the AZA reduction occur much more in the combination group, right? But of course, this may be first that is consistent with the notion that the venetoclax has a more marrow toxicity. And then they in the randomized registration trial, you don't know patient received placebo or venetoclax. When the toxicity occur, you can only reduce the drugs which is AZA, right? So if you reduce the AZA too early, too much, that may actually lose some of the activities. And so another thing notice is that the patient may actually have a little higher p53 mutation and also the blast less than five, etc. And so I think that there are several important differences. Actually, at this conference, some of the European group presented the data show pretty good efficacy and safety profile. When they dose the venetoclax just 7 days instead of 14 days in the Verona trial. In the 7 days trial reported by the investigators, they actually demonstrate a good efficacy and the safety and everything else is good. So the talking at the conference is that if the Verona trial was able to turn to the 7 day trial, that may be positive. But anyway, that's too late. To be honest, the Verona trial negative report result is kind of surprising and, of course, disappointed. But at the same time, that's also why many MDS experts, KOLs around the world, are very excited, highly interested to join our GLORA-4 trial. We all have the same goal to help the patients with MDS globally. And hopefully, we could have a very good enrollment and have a quicker readout of GLORA-4. Thank you.
Great, very clear. Thank you.
Thank you, Wenbin. Our next question comes from Matthew Bigler from Oppenheimer. Hi, Matthew.
Hey guys, thanks for doing this event. I'll ask about CLL. Can you talk about the pivotal GLORA trial and the decision to use ibrutinib as the control arm while some of your competitors are choosing to use ven-based regimens like IV or VO? That's number one. And also number two, do the results of the CLL17 trial change anything in terms of the treatment landscape or physicians' propensity to use one combination over the other? And kind of how does that affect your thinking for Lisa's development strategy? Thanks.
So you mean the GLORA-4 GLORA trial design, right? Cleared by FDA.
Correct.
Yeah, I think that's a very good question, especially with the CL17. I think we have to consider this from two sort of angle. To be honest, clinically, with all the data, clearly show the combination of a BTK inhibitor with a BCL2 inhibitor is probably the best for the CL patients, especially the fixed duration, right? So our GLORA trial looking for is more just add-on strategy. Part of the reason is that in the CL right now, BTK widely used, especially the couple already in the first line. Overall, actually, the result is pretty good, right? Just a single agent. If you do the registration trial, randomized, most likely you have to do the BTK inhibitor alone as a control arm, which nobody will want to do that, including B1, right? So we took this add-on strategy. Actually, the BTK inhibitor can be investigator choice. Okay, can be abiraterone, can be acala, can be zalu. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, I think as you can see, more and more BTK inhibitors and degraders enter the market. The CLL patients will have more options. But there's one thing also very clear is that single agent BTK inhibitors, especially in the high risk of patient population, is not sufficient. Okay, so our goal is really to look in these suboptimal responders of a CLL with BTK inhibitors and add to the BCL inhibitor. Okay, this addition, this add-on strategy will clearly offer patient a benefit. And more importantly, this is a trial design agreed by the FDA. Okay, so I think that the more BTK inhibitors used in the CLL is actually good for us, and we don't have a DDI issue. We have a very good safety profile, very easy, quick combination to benefit the patients from the really early on is the key advantage. I think another question, I think part of answer to your question is in the GLORA trial currently, we are not looking for the fixed duration. Partially is because the control arm BTK inhibitor alone is not fixed duration, right? So that's why in the combination, we have to be continue with the BTK inhibitors. But I think in the in reality, after we have more clinical data, we probably could talk with the regulatory agency that after, let's say, maybe 18 months, that's actually the design of our GLORA-2 trial, is a combination with acala for fixed duration, 18 months. Okay, I think the data readout in a while probably will help us to discuss with the regulatory agency. Maybe actually fixed duration is the way to go. We don't need that for both arms. I think that that's really possible. And actually, CLL17 support that fixed duration may actually offer better response to patients without the continued treatment.
Thanks, Dr. Yang.
Thank you.
Thanks, Matthew. Our next question comes from Justin Zelin of BTIG. Hi, Justin.
Thanks for taking our questions and congrats on these data presentations. So I'll ask a question on all your ASH data sets here. You showed deeper molecular responses as well as broad activity across resistance mutations developing on asciminib treatment. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on how you view your agent here fitting within the landscape of next generation TKIs and development across both CML and ALL, including those in development, and how you view it strategically fitting in within the landscape. And I'll ask a follow-up.
A very good question, Justin. I think first of all, right now, of course, there are more allosteric and the TKI enter the CML development and the potentially to the market. But I think let's look at two set of data. Number one, in the CML, the BCR-ABL, one of what the so-called gatekeeper mutation is T315I. And on top of that, there's the compound mutation, which means there's more than one mutation in the single cell. So, and most commonly are those T315I plus like E225 and others, okay? And we demonstrate clearly in the preclinical and also in the clinical setting for the BCR-ABL with T315I and other compound mutations, olmertinib is the most potent one, okay? The best one. So we have really good deep response and also broad response, okay? And you can see that the current data from 10, 701, they actually do not have that activity in the trial, phase one trial data so far. They didn't enroll those patients or have a very minimal number of those mutation patients, okay? So I think for the late line CML, especially those with the T315 mutations, asciminib or TURMS, and another one, the Enlivens, do not have a really strong activity. So I think that's the major differentiation we have in the CML space, the late line, the CML with the mutations. In the ALL, asciminib and all other allosteric inhibitors, because of the mechanism of action, they are very selective, but they are not really potent against the specific fusion protein, which is the same target, BCR-ABL, but it's more P190, okay, not P210. So overall, all these allosteric inhibitors do not have much trials for the Ph-positive ALL. So I think a Ph-positive ALL deserve more potent TKI and also really good safety. I think that's the advantage we have. You can see, even though it's a small number of patients over 50 still, that we demonstrate we double actually what the ponatinib was able to demonstrate in the 3 months MRD inactive rate. So I think a combination, the late line CML with the mutation, which is account at least 40%, and a really excellent efficacy and a safety overall in the Ph-positive ALL, especially this is the first line. I think that the significance of the POLARIS-1 clearance by FDA EMA is that this is the first line ALL patients. We really want to offer the patients the best benefit, and then they also can continue in the maintenance treatment. In China, we have ALL patient taking olverembatinib, the longest one, more than 3 years. Okay, and the ALL is a really high prevalence in Asian countries, in China, Japan, and Korea. It's like the CLL in the West, in U.S., Europe. So there's a huge unmet medical need, and we probably offer the best one. Another, I think, important aspect is that this data by other companies presented at ASH, we actually had a similar data, even probably better, because we take a patient in the U.S. by MD Anderson PI, the same PI, Dr. Jabbour, 4 years ago. Okay, we have a data, a patient who failed ponatinib, who failed asciminib, who failed even both at ponatinib, asciminib. Okay. But older PI at that time says, Dajin, you guys should talk to the FDA, do the pivotal phase two trial. Okay. But at that time, Project Optimus already started. Okay. FDA really wanted you do more dose optimization, looking for the best safety efficacy dose. Number two, they really require you to do the RCT. Okay. So when you do the RCT, you can think about what could happen to those compounds right now. I think we're probably the last one to use bosutinib as a control arm in the RCT trial design.
Great. And if I could just ask a follow-up question on Lisataclax. Just given the practical advantages you're seeing here over standard of care, are you seeing increased interest amongst investigators in exploring additional combination regimens here? And if there are any specific partner therapies or fixed duration doublets that are emerging as the most compelling that you'd like to highlight based on that interest?
Yeah, I think this is an important question. So definitely in the CLL, patient population, fixed duration is the way to go, right? And it's just regulatory wise, you need the BTK inhibitor as a control arm. That's where is the hurdle. And so we take this add-on strategy, which is actually more BTK inhibitor approved or degrader approved is better, because it doesn't matter which inhibitor or degrader, as long as it has the same target, same pathway, switching between the BTK inhibitors or even degraders will not help a CLL patient much. Okay, so both, especially those high risk, 17p deletion, TP53 mutation, those BTK inhibitor alone will not benefit, will not reach the optimal response. Okay, so that's at least suboptimal responders is at least 50, 60 patient population in the CLL, right? So add-on strategy and eventually fixed duration of the BTK inhibitor with the BCL2 inhibitor is probably the best way. And in that case, you need looking for the BCL inhibitor have favorable PK properties and safety profile, and also no DDI. Okay, I think that's where, especially in the CLL community, KOL really like our drug. It is a daily dosing up. That's important for CLL patients. Probably not so much for the AML MDS, because that only need 2 days dosing up, start from the 200 milligram. And so the overall, I think this lisaftoclax really offer the additional better option for the KOLs in the CLL community, and benefit the patients more than any other therapies.
Great. Thanks for taking our questions. Congrats again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Justin. We have time for one more set of questions. Have a question from Greg Renza from Truist.
Great. Thanks, Feet, and thank you, Dr. Yang and Dr. Zai, for a great weekend and great presentation. Dr. Yang, maybe just on lisaftoclax, just in keeping with respect to the full release of the clinical data from the China registrational, just wanted to give you an opportunity to just remind us of the key highlights there that supported the approval in China, especially in the context of what other BCL2s are showing at ASH and up to date. And maybe for V, just how this is translating with respect to sales in China, and any help on how we should be thinking about the trajectory there. And I do have a follow-up. Thank you.
We go ahead, you can answer.
Yeah, no, thank you, Greg. As it relates to sales, we haven't given public guidance, as you know. We have made the investments for a sales force in China to drive first mover advantage of lisaftoclax in China. We made those, we have the people in place. We're increasing our market penetration as we speak. The uptake is going well, and we'll have the numbers reported in our next upcoming annual report. But we'll be sure to give detail, to the public as it relates to the sales trajectory. I think we're positive as we speak right now with the way things are going.
Maybe I can add a little more here. I think that they was launching in July, and the first 4 months already, we do see a really good uptake, high interest, not just from the CLL, SLL approved indication, but also from the AML, MDS, myeloma, DLBCL, and also the pH negative L. I think as we mentioned before, BCL-2 selective inhibitor is really considered the small molecule of a PD-1. Have multiple indications, multiple combinations. I think the first 4 months or first 100 days sales from our experienced commercial team, which they had launched the BTK inhibitors in China, really see the huge uptake penetration, and of course also offer the patient more benefit with this approval in China. I think that they moving forward, we clearly demonstrate our advantage differentiation over another class, especially in the case of MDS and potentially also multiple myeloma, which we had an oral presentation last year at the ASH Grand Ballroom, and the other like BeiGene, I think that they're also behind us in those indications. But I think overall, we probably offer the balance of potency, safety, and also convenience as the preferred BCL-2 selective inhibitor.
Great, thank you. And just a last one, as we look into your pipeline, especially with several protein degrader developments occurring at ASH this past weekend, how do you see your own protein degrader pipeline developing and being positioned for competitiveness? Thanks again.
Good question. We do in our pipeline, especially put a major effort in the degrader, the PROTAC. But we do looking carefully for each target, whether inhibitor or whether the degrader. I think it's really first looking for the specific target that's more like a driver for the disease. And our ED inhibitor is also allosteric inhibitor, and we do have upcoming. The one example we can give is the MDM2 PIV3 degrader. Our APG115, the MDM2 PIV3 inhibitor have been in the clinical trial in multiple indications, including combination with the PD-1. But to be honest, we and other MDM2 PIV3 inhibitor all run into same bottleneck that is related to the mechanism action that the inhibitor, when you release that interaction blocking the PIV3, you upregulate PIV3, and then the same time when you upregulate PIV3, they will come back to upregulate MDM2. So accumulation of MDM2 will then block the PIV3 tumor suppressor function. I think that may be part of reason we and others have been working on this target for more than 10 years in the clinic now. Still no approved MDM2 PIV3 inhibitors to the market. So that's a part of reason we develop a degrader. And in the case of MDM2 PIV3 degrader, you put completely lock out the target protein MDM2. And at least in the preclinical setting, one dosing, just one shot in the animal model is sufficient to cause and maintain complete tumor regression. Okay, so I think we do have a serious pipeline upcoming for each of the degraders we're working on. And I think we do think that these some of the target, the degrader would offer advantage over the inhibitors.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Yang. I think that's all the questions for now. I'd like to conclude by thanking everybody for joining this session and your support. Very excited to share the data with you. Please write us and contact us for any follow-up. And we'll see you at JP Morgan next year. And in the meantime, wish you all happy holidays and a healthy, happy 2026. This is a
Thank you
wrap.
all.
Goodbye,
Thank
everybody.
you.
Thank you. Bye.